Our first panel is going to be from the governor's office, and before we get started, based on the very animated discussion that we had in our opening meeting, I think the panelists can expect a lively discussion from our committee. So if you could, please try and limit your discussion to about 5 minutes, which I know is very difficult, but I can virtually guarantee you that this committee is going to sink their teeth into it, and we, as I say, you can expect a very lively discussion. Welcome this morning. If you would, please come forward and introduce yourselves to the committee for the record. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Witt, Vice Chair Riley, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Alley. I'm Governor Kulongoski's Deputy Chief of Staff. I want to thank you for the opportunity to give a very brief introduction. I recently joined the governor's staff in large part because I believe continued investment in economic development is essential to build on the success we have experienced over the last 4 years. I've had firsthand experience working with the members of the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development, the Oregon Innovation Council, and the Oregon Nano and Microscience Institute. And I can tell you the focus and dedication of very senior business leaders on these projects speaks volumes of the passion that these people show for helping our state. Their recommendations are practical, thoughtful, prudent, and responsible. I'm looking forward to working with you in my new role, and thank you for your support of the governor's economic development budget as we work together to build greater opportunities for all Oregonians. Thanks.
Thank you, Ellen.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair Riley, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tim McCabe. I am the governor's economic development policy advisor. I want to thank you for the opportunity to give a brief overview of the governor's economic development policy. As you know, three of the governor's top priorities are his education enterprise, health care coverage for all children, and energy independence with a goal to make Oregon the renewable energy capital of the world, well, the nation anyway. In order to accomplish and fund these goals, the governor recognizes that Oregon's economy needs to continue its unprecedented growth. When he took office in 2003, our state was in a recession and had the highest unemployment rate in the nation at 8.6%. Governor Kulongoski set a target of 17,000 new jobs in Oregon during his first term in office. To reach that goal, he worked with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department and other key partners to expand and diversify the state's economic base by attracting new industries, companies, investments, and ideas to Oregon. Today, the results of that effort are evident. Oregon did much better than 17,000 new jobs. Under Governor Kulongoski's leadership, over 130,000 new jobs were created, and Oregon boasts the fifth fastest growing state economy in the nation. The state unemployment rate is now at 5.1%, the lowest rate recorded since 2001. In order to continue this positive growth, the governor's economic development budget includes $38.2 million for the innovation plan developed by the Oregon Innovation Council, which the governor and the legislature created to develop a biennial innovation plan that directs public investments to stimulate economic development and job growth. Also included in this budget is a $15 million investment in human capital, a critical investment if Oregon's industries are to compete successfully in today's hyper-competitive global marketplace. $2.1 million to market Oregon's business advantages both in America and throughout the world. The Brand Oregon investment will develop dynamic marketing campaigns for Oregon products, industry clusters, business recruitment activities, and business expansion. Also, the governor's budget reinstates $4.4 million in funding and consolidates rural and regional investment funds to support activities that benefit rural economies. Bob Repine and his very capable staff will discuss these and other aspects of the governor's proposed economic development budget in greater detail later this morning. The governor knows that economic development brings hope and opportunity to Oregonians. His hope and opportunity budget for 2007-09 reinforces an aggressive effort to help the state's economy grow enable Oregonians from every walk of life to share in that growth. In order to ensure continued economic growth for Oregon, we hope that the legislature will continue to support the governor's economic development budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, it's great to see you.
Good morning.
Vice Chair Riley and members of the committee, and Vice Chair Lim and members of the committee. My name is Lita Colligan, and I'm Governor Kulongoski's Workforce Policy Advisor. And along with my colleagues, I want to also thank you for the opportunity to talk about the governor's vision for Oregon's workforce this morning. It's great that we have a Workforce and Economic Development Committee of the legislature because these things are so connected. First, I want to start by saying that the governor has built some very strong partnerships and continues to build those partnerships with the business and labor communities, with our education and workforce training partners, and also with the legislature to achieve his vision. He can't do it without all of those partners. He's made my job very, very easy over the last couple of years because he has been an ardent and active champion for workforce training. He sees it, education and workforce training, as the critical path to competing in a global economy. He understands the seriousness of global competition. He understands that education and skills training build a strong business climate and a strong economy. They make possible more and better family wage jobs, and ultimately they create a higher quality of life for all Oregonians. You have heard the governor speak about this many, many times. He talks about his education enterprise and investments in skills training. He did it at the Oregon Business Council, in his inaugural address, on the campaign trail, and in his State of the State address last year. He is so eloquent on this topic and so passionate about it because he speaks from his own personal experience, both as an industrial worker and also as an attorney representing workers. He believes Oregon can achieve this vision because his success came from acquiring advanced skills and also a strong post-secondary and professional education. The governor wants all Oregonians to have that same opportunity. The governor's vision for competing in a global economy is to make Oregon the talent capital of the world, and I mean the world, not the nation. He wants Oregon to be a magnet for companies to locate in our state and for companies to expand here because of the competitive skills of their workers. Just as the governor turned to the State Board of Education and the State Board of Higher Education for advice on his education enterprise, he also turned to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, his 25-member business and labor-led workforce advisory board, for a plan to build a globally competitive workforce. And what you have in front of you today is the advice that was given to the governor by the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. It's a strategic plan called Winning in the Global Market. Very simply, it calls for a strong education enterprise complemented with targeted skills training. The governor is seeking your partnership to provide stable and adequate funding for education, all the way from pre-K to 20. And he sees that as the foundation for preparing a skilled workforce. He's also seeking your report, your support, for an expanded state role in skills training, targeted at high-wage, high-demand occupations. To this end, I want to highlight two of the governor's top workforce priorities that he hopes will be debated and supported in this committee. First, House Bill 2206, which would establish the Skill Up Oregon Fund. It's a $10 million investment to raise the skills of low-skill Oregonians, essentially preparing them with training to access higher wage jobs. This investment is included in the governor's budget and is funded with an increase in the corporate minimum income tax. Second, a policy option package, which Tim also mentioned, for $15 million called the Cluster Investment Fund. This is included by the governor in the budget for the Department of Oregon Economic and Community Development, and it would provide state resources for current worker training. One is for unemployed low-skill workers, the other is for current workers. The current worker training investment would expand our existing and successful employer workforce training fund program that is now supported with very limited and restricted federal dollars. Today we have leaders of our state agencies on workforce here, and unfortunately our workforce board members who are going to testify in front of you today are not able to make it because of the weather. But before I move on, I just want to make one really strong point about why skills training is a major policy issue for Oregon and for the governor. Our economy is changing rapidly. Globalization, changing demographics, and advancing technology are all contributing to this change. And just as our economy is changing, our workforce system and its services must change to meet its challenges. The role of the system must move beyond helping unemployed people find work. Although this is a very important service, and we do it very well, and we serve over 200,000 people every year with these services. However, due to a shrinking labor pool, declining unemployment, the changing nature of work, and high numbers of people without the basic skills or education to qualify for family wage jobs, the role of the system must expand to meet the changing needs of businesses and workers. To fill jobs now, the system must help both unemployed and low-skill workers to gain higher skills for higher paying jobs. And we must have a systemic program to retool current workers so they can keep their jobs. This expanded role requires new tools, and that's why the governor is seeking broad legislative support for these two key state-funded training resources, the Skill Up Oregon Fund and the Cluster Investment Fund that I mentioned before. Businesses urgently need skilled workers and are making decisions now about keeping and growing jobs in Oregon or someplace else in the world. And Oregon workers urgently need advanced skills to compete, to retain their jobs. And ultimately, this training results in increased revenues to the state to advance for workers who are advancing in their professions. Oregon has the opportunity now if and only if we respond quickly and decisively to this urgent economic issue for our state. We hope, and Oregon workers and businesses hope, we can count on your support during this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate those comments and the governor's office's insight into the need. I think, in short, we either do it here or in a globally competitive marketplace, it will be done someplace else. With that, questions or comments from the committee? Representative Gollum.
It was very gratifying to hear from all three of you and the words that are written down. I wrote, doesn't sound much like an English major to me. the notes that I scribbled, all Oregonians, rural economy, skill up, state resources, family wage jobs, quickly and decisively are the terms that I heard, and I applaud them. And at 30,000 feet, they sound good, but I'd like to drill in a little deeper. The highest unemployment rate in the state is in Grant County. County I represent, second highest unemployment rate, or maybe it's the third, is in Sherman County, the county I represent. How exactly, when we say all Oregonians, that is Oregonians in Grant County, right now the D.R. Johnson's plant is on one shift. We used to have three mills in John Day. We have one that works one shift. We have no mill in Kimberly anymore. We don't have many people there either. But how are we going to get from those words, which carry some weight, down to John Day, specifically? How are we going to do that? how can I help?
Chair Witt, Representative Dellum, I think there are many and multiple strategies to get there, and some of the things that Alan and Tim talked about in terms of stimulating economic growth are part of that. But in terms of training the workforce, the resources that the governor's requesting in his budget are going to be dispersed to local areas, and your workforce boards, in partnership with the business community there, will be looking for where the best opportunities are, how to train people for the skilled jobs that are there. We have spent the last 4 years using federal dollars to stimulate economic growth through workforce training, directing resources into your local workforce boards. And those folks have been using those federal dollars to provide grants to companies to increase the skills of their workers and also to help unemployed people get retrained. It's just that we have a very, very limited resource to do it, and especially in rural communities. There's a lot of the resources are distributed in where there's higher populations, and so based on the federal formulas, and so we really have a difficult time getting as much economic stimulation in rural Oregon as we need to. But this certainly is an opportunity for us to change that with some state focus and some state resources invested in the programs.
Thank you.
And I think, Representative Dahlem, that we're going to be hearing from some other people, too, that maybe are focusing in on rural areas, hopefully.
Maybe I can make a comment as well.
Please.
If that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Representative Dahlem, I've only been on the job for about 18 hours, I think, now. But, one of the reasons that I took the job was I sat down with the governor, and he said, Alan, many of the problems that we still have in Oregon, we've made a lot of advances, is just rooted in family wage jobs for all Oregonians. And I've spent my career building jobs, mostly in the Willamette Valley, very high-paying jobs, competing globally with places like China and Japan and Germany. And his words really rang true with me. And I've toured around the state a little bit in my chairmanship of the AEA and seen what some of the other parts of the state need. And already I've started thinking about how can I leverage the kind of opportunities that I see into jobs for rural Oregonians. When I look at deals now, when I talk to people about deals and recruiting people to build companies here, one of the first questions is, okay, well, how can we create jobs outside of the Willamette Valley? Is there a way for us to do it? And I'm not going to tell you that I've solved it. We're far from doing that. But we are engaging in a dialogue that I don't think occurred over the last 10 or 15 years. And with your help and with your visibility about what are the issues in your areas and with some of the connections that we can make, I think we can make some progress in this area and create jobs in some of the rural areas of Oregon for all the Oregonians.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about, I really applaud the mission of this, of workforce development. I think is one of the most important pieces of our economy, and having a skilled workforce is very important, and I recognize that. But I'm curious, when we award workforce development dollars, does the state set criteria that must be met in these programs when those dollars are awarded to certain companies, and do our local WIB boards also have consistent criteria across the state?
Chair Witt, Representative Holby. Yes, the answer is yes, and I think we will probably be coming back to talk with you in more detail about some of the programs that we've been operating and how they relate to the new resources that we're seeking. Excuse me. But the bottom line is, yes, the state provides guidelines to the local boards. They include wage levels, certifications, a private sector match, alignment with industry cluster and economic development activity in their regions, et cetera. So there's quite a list of guidelines, and then at the local level, they also add additional guidelines based on what they're trying to accomplish regionally. So, yes, and we'd be happy to come back and talk with you in more detail about those.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
And since we do have consistent criteria across the state on those, do we also have the ability to look back at where we have specifically awarded money to judge how that criteria has been met and what the outcome of those workforce investment dollars have done? And if so, is the committee able to get a list of where our dollars have gone in past years?
Chair Witt, Representative Holvey, yes, you will get a report. And again, these are relatively new programs, so I think some of the outcomes and the tracking that we want to do will be much more informative over the years. We will be able to track both workers and companies to see what's happened. But we do have at least the beginning of those performance measures to bring to you at some time in the future.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you all very, very much, and I think I can speak for the entire committee that we look forward to working with the governor's office to make sure that we have the very best economic and workforce development of any of the states right here in Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next panel will be Oregon's Economic Development Department, and we have Director Bob Repine. And whoops, excuse me, would you stand down for a minute? I'm sorry, I skipped one panel. We have an economic analysis from Dave Beck, acting state economist. Jump the gun here, Bob, we'll get you up in a minute. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome, and if you'd please introduce yourself for the record and to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Witt and the members of the committee. My name is Dave Beck, the acting state economist. I'm here today to give you an overview of the Oregon's economy. It's a 5-minute helicopter overview of Oregon's economy, so I'll move very fast.
Thank you.
If you want to stay with me on slide number 2, I said Oregon is an open economy. We have a large presence of export sector, manufacturing and agricultural sectors, that is. A lot of outputs in these sectors go out of the state. So it is very important to look at national and international conditions to check the health of Oregon's economy. Next slide shows a quick look at the Oregon's economy. In 2006, Oregon's employment gained 3.2%. Employment growth has been strong since 2003. Now we see a sharp deceleration in job growth. And the most recent quarter, fourth quarter, we had only 0.3% job growth. Downside risks abound in 2007. And on slide number 5, I have diversity of real gross state products. And if you look at the pie chart, you will see a large presence of computer and electronics, accounting for about 20% of total gross production. But if you look at the pie chart again, you see Oregon's economy is really diverse at this point. In terms of employment shares in total employment, slide number 6, I have industry contribution and employment shares out of total employment. And you will see there is remarkable similarity between the nation and Oregon in terms of sector employment shares. Now, between 1990 and 2006, manufacturing share declined from about 16% to 12%. At this point, our non-farm sector employs about 1.7 million workers. Out of this, private sector is about 83%. The rest is government sector. Our manufacturing sector is a little bit, in terms of shares, a little bit higher than the nation. Our manufacturing share is 12.3% in 2006. Nation has 10.9%. And the next page, page 7, shows the comparison between Oregon and the nation in terms of sector employment shares. And you see a similarity between the two. Slide 8 shows employment growth over time since 1991. We had very high growth in the 90s and struggled at the turn of the century and for a couple of years after that. And then 2004 and on, we're outstripping the nation in terms of growth. Slide 9 shows a little more extended employment growth. And we had strong growth in the late 80s, in the 90s. And what's remarkable about this is the sharp deceleration in jobs growth toward the end of 2006. Oregon exports about 9% of total output to foreign countries. The great majority of our exports go to Asian countries and Canada. Exports help us in the manufacturing sector and the agriculture sector. And if you see the performance of exports, you will see our employment growth following closely in terms of.
Do you want us to hold our questions, or I have a particular question on exports.
Why don't we do that right now?
Could you, when you talk about agricultural exports, what does that mean, and what's our leading agricultural export?
Chair Whip and Representative Dallin, it's largely grains.
Grain, and where does grass seed fit into that?
That's part of all grains. That's the largest component.
We have a huge reliance in the eastern part of the state on cattle. How are we? Where do we stack up? What percentage of this is cattle, and how do we stand up as exporters of cattle, either on the hoof or in the box?
Sure, with Representative Dallin. I think I looked at the data, and that portion is relatively minor in terms of agricultural products, and I think the great majority is not being exported to foreign countries, rather to other states. That's not captured here.
Yes.
So when we talk about exports, it's about international exports, not to out of states. That's
Mr. Beck, Representative Girard, I think, has a question as well.
I just have a quick question, and that goes back to slide 9, where the deceleration is occurring now. Is that related to any particular sector? I know that construction trades are down considerably. Is that the major component of the downward trend? Or
Chair Witt and Representative Girard, construction is still strong.
Okay.
We have slowed down in housing, but we have industrial office projects, and we have large public transportation projects like roads. So that helps us in achieving higher construction growth still. Now, in the fourth quarter, to be exact, the weakness is found in trade sectors, retail trade, wholesale trade, transportation services, and wood products, and transportation equipment. These are the very weak sectors at this point, which is very consistent with the national economic slowdown, where we see housing slowdown and transportation equipment in terms of consumers spending less than before. So if I can...
Mr. Beck, I had a very similar question, and would that be a leading economic indicator? And if it is, does that pretend something significantly deleterious to the state of our economy here?
Chair Witt, that's an excellent question. At this point, we're putting together our next forecast, and we're looking at all these economic indicators. Now, sure, we had housing slowdown, and sure, we had a slowdown in consumer spending, which shows up in retail sector job loss and wholesale trade job loss. But at this point, what we see is a slowdown, but not leading to a recession. The reason is except for a few sectors, including wood products and transportation equipment, we see strong growth still. Healthcare, professional and business services, and in the fourth quarter, we had some strong growth in leisure and hospitality industries too. Now, we lost jobs in manufacturing, and that trend will continue for a while. That's because we see a further housing slowdown. Now, is housing slowdown, does the effect of housing slowdown going to spread over to other sectors and leading to job losses in housing-related industries? We're watching very closely the movement. As far as we see, the overall economy is still growing. Deceleration in job growth is a concern. But we continue to expect that we'll have some growth this year.
Thank you.
I would like to
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up on that, I'm looking at your non-farm employment growth chart on page 9, and it sounds as though what you're saying is that the situation we're in is more like 97-99 than like 91 or worse, 2001. Would that be a fair summary?
Chair Witt and Representative Barnhart, I think it is a fair characterization. What we see is actually what other economists consider a mid-cycle correction. We had a overbuilding in housing sector.
People overshot a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
And so what we see is something like 1995, where the economy slowed down quite a bit, but after that, we continue to grow. So that's what we see at this point. I'll move very quickly on slide 11. We have for the export trends, where you see the exports to China increasing very sharply, and exports to Canada also going very, very nicely. And the next slide shows, slide 12 shows what are the major sectors to major export countries. If you look at personal income on page 13, at this point, we're catching up with the nation. For some years, we lagged the nation in terms of personal income growth. And in terms of population growth, in the next page, actually, our population growth is much higher than the nation. Of course, this population growth poses both opportunity and challenge to us. And if you look at slide number 15, you see population change and then migration. And two-thirds of population growth comes from net migration. And slide 16 shows that about half of total population growth is through domestic migration, and one-fourth coming from international side. Natural increase is only one-fourth of total population growth.
Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Beck, on slide 13, when you briefly touched on our personal income growth that we're catching up, and I notice this chart is an annual percentage change. Do you have figures on what the annual average income is compared to the U.S., and how much more growth do we have to, or where are we at in that scale? It doesn't reflect that in your chart.
Chair Witt and Representative Colby, at this point, in terms of percentage, when we consider U.S. as one, our per capita income is about 90 to 93%. So there is a gap between the national average income, per capita income, and Oregon's per capita income. So in the 90s, actually, when we're growing really fast, we're catching up. At one point, Oregon's per capita income reached about 94-95% compared to the nation. Because of much sharper slowdown in manufacturing in our economy after the spectacular internet bubble burst, we actually seeing deterioration in terms of per capita income. So at this point, it's 92-93% of the national average.
Follow-up. So
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in more simple terms, we're still below the national average for per capita income, is what you're saying?
Chair Witt and Representative Holby, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
And finally, thanks for giving me a little more time. The Oregon's economic environment on page 17, we have a diverse economy with substantial international presence, and we still have relatively lower energy costs because of hydropower. We have high quality of life, not many dispute that, and we have well-educated workforce. In fact, college-educated population is now above the national average. We still have affordable housing. We're comparing Washington State and California. Our economy has Pacific Rim orientation. Now, that's where many vibrant economies are, Asian economy, Canada, and we have relatively less trade with Latin American countries, but that economy is growing, so perhaps there's an opportunity for us too. I thank you for the opportunity to come here and give you an overview of the Oregon's economy. It took more than 5 minutes, but I thank you for your patience.
Mr. Beck, you did a wonderful job in covering Oregon's economy for us in such a very short amount of time. Great job. Questions, comments from our committee?
Representative Bell.
Chairman Ritz, if I might, this chart, I'm involved in the education committee, and we want desperately to raise the educational level of the state, and the percentages escape me right now. We just heard the governor's plan on skilling up, and then to read that we have a very educated workforce. I'm not sure that those statements aren't congruent, but we have set a goal for more education. Are we a leader now?
Chair Witt and Representative Dalem, average can be deceiving. And although our college-educated population is higher than the national average, I think we have a long way to further educate our workforce. We're in a position to compare us to California and Washington State in terms of attracting industries. I guess in that sense, we have some more to catch up with the neighboring states.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Beck. He's a good friend of mine, and I'm proud having him as a friend. Anyway, while we are saying we have a higher workforce, a more higher college educated, but still our economy always behind other state high unemployment rate, I don't think we ever caught up with national average last 20 years. Some time ago, when our timber and agriculture industry, we were higher than national average. Since then on, we were always behind. This is a nagging question that we are all responsible, but how could we improve in the future? You know, that you mentioned our economy is growing, even though decelerating at this time, and you mentioned we have a higher quality of a workforce in our state, and then housing cost is low compared to other states, including the energy cost. Still, we are behind. Somehow we need to be at least par with national average or better. I'm not sure when we can catch up. And also at the same time, I'm deeply concerned at this time. 1991, we had a recession. And 2001 with that recession. And we know for sure, and I know for sure, it's going to come again. And somehow we need to have a soft landing when we have a recession. What is your suggestion, Ashia? I know this is a very difficult question. This is not simply a local issue. This is a national, worldwide issue. Somehow when the time comes, we need to get ready for this. Last recession, we were not prepared well. And we had a great impact in funding for education and plus many other areas. And then somehow, even though we passed through those experiences, still we are not ready for that. I'd like to have your wisdom on this subject, maybe in 1 or 2 minutes, maybe.
Dr. Beck, before you share that wisdom, could you just move the microphone a little bit there? Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Witt and Representative Lim, I'm glad to stand in front of you again. That's a very deep question that will require a lot of thinking and strategy, but as far as our state is concerned, our options are a little limited. Now, we're not the national government who could put in money or when the economy is slowing down. What we can do is through some public projects, like the one that we're doing at this point, road projects, bridge projects. These, together with federal money, the state is putting in a lot of resources into that. And that kind of softened the downside impact coming from housing sector slowdown. So we have a right project in transportation to soften the slowdown in housing. So the timing was perfect. And as far as the quality of workforce is concerned. Representative Lim, you're exactly correct when you said that we're just catching up, and higher quality we're talking about is just quite recent phenomenon. If you look at 1990 census, the college-educated population in this state was below national average. And in short 10 years, we made a remarkable progress. If we continue to make this progress and attracting highly educated and highly motivated young workers, and that's what we're doing at this point, our state's future is bright. And I think it's very important to create environment where young workforce, highly educated workforce can come in and make this Oregon their state. If we can do some kind of PR campaigns, if that's needed, we come up with the strategy to do that. At the state level, because we don't have monetary means, we don't have monetary policy, our options are relatively limited. And all the fiscal projects actually take time to implement and see the impacts coming from it, unlike monetary policies.
Dr. Beck, you've talked a good deal and showed us a number of charts here that describe Oregon's natural and competitive advantages. Another one of those very broad questions, could you describe from us, from your vantage point, some of the major challenges that we face as a state in terms of our economic setting?
Chair Webb, I don't know if I have good answers to that.
Okay.
Let me
give you an example. In our last committee meeting, it was brought up that that our state faces a veritable crisis 10 to 15 years out into the future, in terms both first of number of workers and secondly, adequately trained workers for the specific jobs that we will have coming open. From your perspective, do you see this as a problem, and do you see any kinds of related challenges that we face out into the future?
Chair Witt, the workforce development is not my specialty, mm-hmm. but I'll do my best in answering your question. Our state economy is changing. There's no question about that. And our economy is maturing. Now, what that means is we had manufacturing-focused, natural resources-focused in the 80s, high-tech manufacturing-focused in 1990s. Now, as our state economy matures, as you saw in comparison between the nation and Oregon in terms of industry employment shares, our economy is acting just like the national economy. Now, what kind of challenge do we have in that case? Well, we cannot depend on high-paying manufacturing jobs anymore. The jobs will be there, but we will work really hard to retain these manufacturing industries. The fact is a lot of manufacturing facilities are being exported abroad. It's a trend, and the trend will continue. Now, we can't fight that trend with 100% results. We can try, and we should try hard to retain whatever we have at this point, and we can do something about that, I'm sure. As far as creating jobs in our economy, the bulk of jobs will come from non-manufacturing, relatively low-paying jobs. Of course, I'm comparing to the kind of jobs we created in the 1990s. So then, as Representative Holby mentioned, that it's going to be very hard for us to catch up with the nation in terms of per capita income. If we continue to create high-paying jobs, then we can move closer to the nation. On the other hand, if we continue to create jobs that are not paying enough, then it's going to be very hard for us to catch up with the nation. In fact, in terms of finance jobs, healthcare jobs, if we create jobs serving the very low end, unlike the Wall Street in New York, unlike the healthcare industry and some other big cities where high-paying jobs are being created. In our state, if you only create the jobs that serve only the lower-end customers, clients, that's not going to help us in terms of bringing up our wages and income. So that's one of my concerns as an economist in terms of economic development. So I try my best, and I'll.
Well, you did a very good job, Dr. Beck, and I would presume then that this is an example. If we build it with a highly skilled and highly educated workforce, then we can expect that. Both the employers and the jobs that have demands for those sets of skills will follow. Representative Dolan, do you?
Yes, when you talk about building jobs at the high end, where's the threshold that we cross when we say it is a high-paying job? What is that threshold? When we look at job creation, what should we be striving for?
Chair Witt and Representative Dalem, that's a good question. I don't think I have good answer to that. But if you look at the average wages in many different industries, if you look at retail, compare that with other industries, professional and business development, you see a big difference. Now, we will have to create, we'll continue to have jobs to serve retail customers. So we will create jobs in the retail sector. We will create jobs in the healthcare industry. We will create jobs in some other sectors that serve Oregonians. But the jobs in wholesale industries, jobs in information, and jobs in professional services. These are the sectors that I see where wages are higher. Now, I'm not trying to tell you that we should make efforts or focus on creating jobs in these sectors now. In the 1990s, the way I look at high-tech manufacturing, we had a critical mass, and we continue to grow on whatever we had at that point. Now things as high-tech manufacturing matures, and as there is international competition, we don't see any more jobs being created here in Oregon. I think one of your question is about, is there a critical mass in certain industries so that we can build upon that critical mass? I don't know the answer to that. What industry do we have in terms of being close to critical mass? I haven't looked at that matter closely, so I don't have a good answer to that question.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing no further comments or questions, Dr. Beck, thank you so very, very much. A tremendous job. Virtually impossible to cover as much information as you did in such a short period of time. You did a tremendous job. Thank you so very much. And I feel like I'm leaning towards a supply-side economist here this morning. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we will hear from Oregon's Economic and Community Development Department, and I'd like to invite up Director Bob Repine and Deputy Director Mike Salzgiver. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thank you so very much for coming this morning, and if you would please introduce yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Thank stated, you. I am Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Economic and Community Development.
And for the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Salzgiver, deputy.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, right now your staff is handing out my addendum to my 30,000-foot presentation. 5 minutes won't allow us to dig too deep to the ground, but I thought some backup documentation that you can use at your leisure would be of value to you. So just briefly, in the document on the two pockets on your left-hand side, you have my outline for my comments. You have a structure of the agency, because I'll reference the employees of the agency, so it gives you an idea how we're structured today. On the right-hand side, in a small document, is just a recently published your eyes first to see it actually in the publication, our strategic plan for 2007-2009, a one-pager on our strategic planning goals and objectives, and a list of our legislative concepts, just to give you some context to the agency of a variety of things that you will be, I'm sure we will be visiting with you during this term. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, again, just want to give you a relatively brief overview of the agency. I want to talk about the reorganization issues that Mr. Salzgiver started on in his interim as the interim director last year before I came on board, which much of the framework that we'll be discussing was in part led by Mike to a very satisfactory level I would submit to all of you. And give you an idea of what we've been doing in the interim, and then talk to you a little bit about some of our strategic planning, and then at the end just make some brief comments about our workforce piece of legislation that you heard Lita Culligan comment to earlier in her testimony. Again, basically the agency is a state agency with 120 employees. Last biennium budget was for 2005-2007 was just under $500 million, including all revenue sources, funds, and fees, which is generally not general fund dollars, but generally lottery dollars and volume bond capacity issues that we have on the biennium. During the 2005-2006 period that we're under today, we went through a series of reorganizations for the agency. Some of you who were on the committee last year remember some of these discussion points, probably well more than you want to remember them. But the agency at the time had nine divisions. If you can imagine, for 120 people, nine divisions makes for a very complex management structure. So it was reorganized into four principal divisions. Those are innovation and economic strategies is one, business and trade development is two, community development is three, and fourth is central operations, supporting all the other above three ones. Also worthwhile noting, in the 2005 session, of which many of you were again part of, we were directed by a budget note to reanalyze the agency's statute authorities. Now, for the faint of heart, that could be both challenging and concerning, but the agency took that on as an opportunity to revisit the framework of what it has been charged to and empowered to do on behalf of the state of Oregon. And through much discussion with both interim committees and the JLAC committee, with Representative Lim being participating with that, and also Representative Holvey, we rewrote, for all practical purposes, reconstructed the statutes that give the agency the authority to do business in Oregon. And that will be found in Senate Bill 350, introduced by a Senate committee. And I'm sure, Mr. Chairman and committee members, that will be a bill that might find its way here for further discussion. That, again, a very comprehensive rewrite of the agency, and the design was, as charged by Senator Schrader, was to redefine the agency in a way that it made the agency more reactive and responsive to the needs of Oregon today. And offer up or suggest changes that would both streamline it and improve its deliverables to its citizens and its customers. And so under that spirit, the work was taken on. And again, we will obviously have further discussions on that as time goes by in the session. Next issue that we did accomplish, and that's looking out to 2007 and 2009, is the strategic planning that we've done for this agency. And that's also founded on that one-pager. And we really struggled with this as we worked on the rewrite of the statutes. We felt that it was important that the strategic plan mimicked or reflected what the rewrite was intended to deliver to you for a discussion. And so we tried to simplify a strategic plan for the agency. One was to make it a mission statement that we thought was really more reflective of what we are supposed to do. I had asked the agency employees when I came on board, what is our mission statement? And for most of them, I don't think any of them could ever recite it because it was much longer than they could remember, and it just didn't seem to be of a significance relative to the work of business we were accomplishing. So with four little words, we have reconstructed the mission statement, and we really believe and boiled down the work that we do. It's to advance Oregon's economy. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Under that fits many, many activities, but our mission is to create the opportunity to advance Oregon's economy. With that, there are three goals under that. First is to promote a favorable investment climate to strengthen businesses, create jobs, and raise real wages. Somewhat speaking to the issue that was raised earlier about jobs and wages for Oregonians. Two is to improve the national and global competitiveness of Oregon's companies. And three is to assist Oregon communities to build capacity to retain, expand, and attract businesses. And that speaks to the issue that you were talking about, Representative. So underneath of those, there are a series of little catchments of obligations and work activities that we will be working on in the next 2 years. But those become our critical missions on behalf of Oregonians. With all that said, it's important if you do look at the one-page fly that we do have in your flyer, and it's also recopied on the inside of the strategic plan. Under the very first goal that I mentioned to you about promoting favorable investment climate to strengthen businesses, create jobs, and raise real wages, our first topic there, or first goal that we're trying to create success for, is invest and engage in training and skilled workforce. And you will have heard about the piece that's part of our legislative budget package. It's a $15 million that requests for workforce activities around clusters. Lita Culligan mentioned about how that relates to what we do, but let me give you what I have learned in a very short period of time, and I'm sure that Mike can even echo this, but one of the main issues that I hear from businesses when we do face-to-face discussions with these companies is no longer as concerned as the the school systems or the tax structure or the utility cost. Primary issue that most businesses ask today to us is, do you have a workforce? Do you have not only a workforce that is in the community, you have a workforce that, if it's in the community, is it trained? If it's a trained workforce or not a trained workforce, can it be trained? And if it is a trainable workforce, can it be sustained? That's what industry is looking for from us today. And so with that challenge of industry as a high priority, the role of this agency, once again, being involved in workforce opportunities in a more focused relationship with these businesses as we do our recruitments for traded sector businesses, and we create opportunities to bring industries together that are like in nature, clusters as we refer to them. How can we help facilitate with our community partners with those businesses, both many times like businesses, sometimes different businesses, but have similarities in workforce needs. How can we work together with them to create a way that we can keep producing or educating people to be ready, skilled up employees for them? And at the same time, how can we keep working with our current industries to improve their workforce skills? The economy and the world competition is changing so dramatically. To be able to keep improving your employees' skills and capacities as the work requirements change is just as critical to the existing businesses as well as to a business who's coming in looking for that skilled workforce. So both moving skilled people through continually and improving their quality of work and their knowledge of work in their current work critical, and also being able to identify workforce opportunities with training people in new business opportunities as we go out and recruit those type of businesses. And so that, in a sense, is what the vision of the $50 million was thought to use the resources for. But again, as I mentioned to you, this is not being done as an agency. It is not our intent, I don't think, nor was it the governor's intent or anybody who's been working on workforce for the state or the interim, that we become the experts on workforce. There is a wealth of talented people, of which you heard Lita Culligan speaking, of which I contend that she is one of those people who is a master of what Oregon needs and is looking for in workforce opportunities. We are but a small piece of that. And I have the opportunity to sit at the table with the community colleges and the employment division and LETA trying to, and the Department of Human Services, trying to figure out how we, as the economic piece of this component, fit into the training elements. And what do we have and what do they have, and how can we do that in a most comprehensive way so we don't have duplication, but we get product and result that speaks to the needs that I hear from businesses on a day-to-day basis. So we're going down and I want to make sure I qualify this right. The agency at one time had a workforce component to it. And, Mike, I can't remember how long ago it was, but you remember?
2001.
I guess in 2001 there was a workforce element to the agency, and for a variety of reasons that some of you might be aware of and other may not, it was the workforce component was taken away from the agency. But I think really as we reframe and restructure the discussion around workforce for the agency today, under this new kind of vision, we will become much more better prepared to help offer those trained workforce to our employees, and businesses who are looking to come to Oregon and or to retain their business relationships in Oregon, which is just as critical. In our business, it's not all about just recruiting. I will tell you, retention is critical, if not more critical. And I think that speaks much to what the question about rural Oregon is. When I go out and talk to communities, and they say, well, what business are you going to bring to me? I usually ask the question, before I worry about bringing a business to you, what businesses do you have there that I can help advance? What businesses can I do, what can I do with your existing businesses in rural communities to make that 10-work relationship a 20-work relationship? How do I expand those opportunities? And that's not to say that we wouldn't bring businesses to them, but there are, in many of our communities, there are vast opportunities to strengthen and build off of what they already have. And with that, many times, activity is what generates more interest from other businesses who are looking to come to a community because they see that their community is reinvesting in the industries and businesses they already have there. And so I tell you that is an approach that can be accomplished in the state of Oregon by us and with our community partners.
Thank you so much, Bob. I appreciate that. Questions from the committee?
I have one question, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Lim.
And Bob, thank you very much for your presentation. And as I look at the chart here, under the international division, there's an office in Taiwan and Japan and others. Where the Korea belong to is under the port, or where the Korea office gone?
They're also under.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vice Chair Lim, if I could, again, Mike Salzgiver, Deputy. The foreign offices report to the International Trade Manager, which is a part of the Business and Trade Development Division. So they, we, during the reorganization last year, we made a determination to have a singular integrated global business development strategy. And as a result of that, we combined the International Division and the Business Development Division together under that single new division. And the foreign offices report through the International Trade Manager to that new division, Business and Trade Development.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gerard.
Chair Witt. Mr. Repine, good seeing you.
Good seeing you, sir.
I have a question. It doesn't have to do with the workforce. I understand the importance of having a trained workforce, and that's what we've been talking about mostly. What is the state of our infrastructure in this state, and does that ever enter into the equation for attracting new industry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the issue of infrastructure is both an intriguing one and a challenging one, I think, for the state of Oregon. I've shared some. I was asked by the chair in a previous phone call I had with him before the end of the year about teeing up topics that I believe that are important to the future of the economics of Oregon. So with your segue, Mr. Grad, I will use that. There are two issues that I believe, Mr. Chairman, I'll go ahead and take the time to answer your question that you asked me on the phone. Two issues that I believe are paramount for Oregon's future economy. And one we are talking about because of the nature of this meeting, and that's workforce. I will tell you, I'm a firm believer from the discussion you are all making about the changing of the population in Oregon, the demands on new jobs, and the huge number of baby boomers, of which many of us are, who are leaving the workforce over a period of time. There will be a huge change in migration of need for skilled, talented workers in Oregon. The number, if I remember correctly, at its height will be somewhere near 650,000 workers, huge number, of which a greater percentage of those are people who will be retiring out of the workforce that we just need to replace, somebody, find somebody to do our job. The second issue is infrastructure. It is will be critical as Oregon grows and becomes more prosperous. As this population of 3.6 million moves to a greater number, we will need to reassess how we will deliver our infrastructure programs to our communities, and which in turn means how are we delivering that infrastructure to those new job opportunities. Because as industry comes here, as industry relocates, hopefully in some of our older industrial sites that we've reclaimed, might have been brownfield sites, we've put them back into service. I think that's appropriate, so generally services are already there. But there will come a point in time when we will not have those low-hanging fruit pieces of property anymore, and we will be looking at areas that will require major infrastructure investments. You can only expect either citizens or developers to pay so much of that over time. When you start putting in major systems, of which would require larger expansions, that is a discussion for resources that we've never had in this state nor in other states, because historically those infrastructures were paid much by federal dollars in the past. And I say in the past because today what they put on the table is far significantly less than what they did in the past. And so we need to come to the resolve or the realization that funding sources of when we put systems in 40, 60, or 80 years ago were no longer there. So you take the where the money will be coming from and what the cost of those new systems are today relative to when the older ones were put into service, and the more complexity of the demands of the quality of the discharge or the quality of the treatment that's placed on by the federal government, those numbers become staggering. And I contend that soon the strategy has to be developed in this state to figure out how we will start looking at the infrastructure of sewer and water just in the same way we have looked at the infrastructure of transportation. Now, we can all relate to transportation because we drive it, we walk across it, and we see it. Sewer and water is one of those infrastructures that we just know it's there, because when we turn on the water or we drain our bathtub, it goes somewhere. But we just don't have that same visual sense that we might have for a highway.
but it is the highway.
I just assume not, Bob.
It is the highway system that is underground that is just as critical to the road system up above if we're going to keep growing and developing economic opportunities in the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
Representative Dolan.
Bob, in that area, does your agency, with the $500 million, and as you describe, I've heard you describe training, investment, and infrastructure. The $500 million, is that designed to stimulate that or to create partnerships? I'm again going back to the other side of the mountain where we logistics problems are huge. Just getting to John Day, getting to Condon, getting to Granite is a huge undertaking. When I go back and talk to those people, they have some deep concerns. But if they're looking for a partnership, your agency is the place to come. You're not going to give them the money to build the infrastructure. You're not going to give them money to invest. You're not going to give them money to train, but you'll partner with them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would maybe recategorize the way you've stated that a little bit as we will give money to help them with infrastructure. We do have infrastructure money. We have special public work funds that we receive from the federal government. We manage that. We have safe water drinking funds that we run through our agency in relationship to the Department of Human Services. So those are resources that are all part of the infrastructure base. I think relative to the question that was asked earlier, is there enough money that will be able or available to start changing out or increasing capacities as the old systems are failing and failing quite rapidly, we don't have enough money. And to that scale, we can do the extensions, we can do the modifications, we can do the upsizes of lines on with communities, and we do that daily in our agency. But can we do a major example I have used, is maybe isn't a good one, but I'll use it. It's the Damascus city. We're going to have a city of Damascus. It doesn't have infrastructure. And there is no, you know, where's the starting point where you start thinking about the sewer and water system for Damascus, which is assumed to be the home of many thousands of people in the metropolitan Portland area. But there is not a system there today, so you're starting from scratch. But as far as what you're referencing to, we have infrastructure programs. We have capacity programs for businesses. We have workforce opportunity resource skills. We have loan programs. We have micro-business loans. We have entrepreneur loans. We have a whole gamut of programs that are available today in partnership with those communities that are used readily and daily with us on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Lim, did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. Did you have any questions before?
Not on this topic.
I had Representative Lynn McHugh first.
That's right. Okay.
By Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Bob, thank you very much again. And you touched upon the very important issue, such as infrastructure, this coming many, many years. You mentioned we don't have enough fund and enough infrastructure if we want to grow a quantum growth in the future. You also mentioned some time ago through the conversation that California passed $40 billion bond measure for this plan, and we don't have any such plan. And do you propose any plan in the future? How could we handle this situation in the future instead of feeding up the piecemeal approach here and there? We need to have some kind of a master plan for 20, 50 years we are going to do. I also discussed with the chair in that matter. What is your suggestion? And my suggestion is we need to have some kind of a study group set up this session and a study on this issue. Maybe we might be able to propose next legislative session, and I'd like to have your comment on this very important subject.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lim, first of all, I also want to let you know that just in scale, this in our budget package, POP package, we have a $100 million special public works fund that we're looking to, so we kind of reload our special public ones funds activities so we can continue doing the work that we currently do in communities all around the state of Oregon. So the state does contribute through lottery-backed bonds for us. Relative to your question, Representative Lim, I think it requires and demands a more comprehensive look. I don't want to say that if you had $400 million or whatever the number was that you stated from the state of Oregon, that would be wonderful. As you all know, that they're 10 times scale of us, and so they can do things that we can't even begin to thinking about. So I think for the state of Oregon, it requires and should have a discussion, and a discussion made up of both representatives from the private sector, representatives from our community partners, cities and counties, who are the recipients or users of those systems or managers of those systems, and the state of Oregon to figure out how big is the issue, how big will the issue be over time, and I think that can be mapped out because there is only a certain life expectancy to those infrastructure systems, and I suspect many of them have already sustained or passed those life expectations. But you can put a cost to that, at least a today cost, and probably roll that up and get an idea of how much money are we talking about, and then try to figure out what are the solutions, and there might be a variety of solutions, and I'm not here prepared to talk about those because, quite frankly, I'm not that knowledgeable on those topics, but I think it is a discussion worthwhile having because it will be an issue, clearly an issue, I think, that some future legislative assembly will be dealing with.
Last question, Representative Barnhart.
It turns out this is really a follow-up on the question that Representative Lim asked. First, a quick comment. The size of that fund would be $4 billion, not $400 million.
I know it was somewhere in the digits were wrong.
But so that's an even more daunting number, isn't it? I have at least two communities in my district that are illustrative of the issue you're raising about infrastructure right now, Coburg and Cresswell. Issues having to do with sewer development, wastewater treatment, and in Coburg at least even a collection system. My experience of that is that we're asking very small communities with very limited governmental structures of their own to make major decisions and major investments with our help and with federal government help and help from other places. And it stretches their capacity to do these kind of things. On the other hand, in order to continue the growth of manufacturing jobs in Coburg and residential development in Cresswell, these are absolutely essential. Are you suggesting, and this is the question, are you suggesting that we need some new structures for evaluating and planning these kinds of systems and perhaps developing a larger overview for them? And if so, what do you have in mind?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, again, I don't want to make sure I'm not assumed to be suggesting anything here, but I think one of the places this will become apparent during this last few months, I had an opportunity to participate in some of Lane Shetterly's discussions with the Big Look that's going underway. And in that discussion, there is a piece relative to land use as it pertains to financing of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So I think there is already kind of a crossroad that's being realizing there is, as we think about our land use planning for the future, we need to become more conscientious about the infrastructure piece that will allow people to have what expectations they think they're going to have with their land, either today and in the future. So I think there's some discussion going on with that. I think it would be another one of those groups I would suggest if a task force or an activity was assigned from the interim, that we would make sure that the Big Look leadership group or somebody from that organization would be part of that discussion, because there is some parallel discussions going on today. But yes, I would say, again, this is just my sense. When we talked about land use 30 years ago in Oregon, we talked about the land. We didn't necessarily talk about what was going to take to quantify or qualify the use of those lands, maybe other than maybe roads, because it was, again, we have a passion or understanding for roads in the state of Oregon. But some of the other things that come along with the development today versus 30 years ago is distinctively different, and it has to be looked at from fresh eyes and how we're going to integrate those activities so those communities that you mentioned can both grow economically and grow the community fiber, the homes that go along with those economic opportunities that they want to have in their community at the same time.
Thank you very much, Bob. And before you go here, I want to commend you for a couple of items that you highlighted. First of all, the importance of infrastructure, and I hope during the course of this session, our committee hears a great deal more about the importance of that from you. I also want to tell you how much I appreciate the focus that you put on retention. You know, it probably doesn't have the glitz and glam that bringing a new company into the state does, but we heard from Dr. Beck here a short while ago about how our state is losing a number of manufacturing jobs, a number of high-paying jobs, and if you look across this committee, those are jobs that are critically important to each one of our districts, and we need to retain the good things that we already have as well as the future development. So thank you so much for your focus on that. And lastly, the focus that you have on that essential workforce, thanks to your department, thank you to the governor's department, thanks to the building trades in this state, we were able to recruit a company to come in here and do some major upgrades in a paper operation in my district. It would not have happened. That would have gone to another state had we not been able to prove conclusively that first we had the skills and second we had enough workers to get the job done. And this was a very high-skilled, high-performance operation that had to be done on time and on budget. And frankly, that company just did not believe that we could turn out the labor, and it was critically important that we were able to demonstrate that. Thank you for making that possible, but also I think this may demonstrate the need for us to have some kind of ongoing committee that has the ability to travel around potentially the nation, potentially around the world, to demonstrate to prospective employers the ability that we have here in this state to turn out a qualified workforce, no matter what the project is. With that, thank you so very, very much. And we'll next hear from Oregon's Workforce Development Department and Commissioner Brawley. If you would please come up. Oh, and I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Ellen. Oregon Employment Department, Lori Warner as well, Director. Thank you both very much. Welcome, and good morning. If you would, please introduce yourselves.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Director for the Employment Department.
And I'm Cam Coyce-Brawley. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development.
Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Cam and I decided I would go first, so I'm going to talk here a little bit with you this morning about the Employment Department and our relationship with economic development and community colleges and workforce development. The Employment Department's mission is to support business and promote employment. And we do that in collaboration with state and local agencies that represent the workforce system. And you're learning about that workforce system today, and I assume the committee will continue over time to. On the state level, the Workforce Policy Advisor for the Governor, Lita Colligan, chairs a workforce policy cabinet where the agencies meet regularly to talk about and work through issues that cross agency lines in efforts to improve the workforce system. So you should know that that's an ongoing coordination effort. I think Bob referred to it a few minutes earlier when he was here. From the Employment Department's perspective, the workforce system has many things that are working well. I'm going to highlight three of them for you that the Employment Department is responsible for, and then I'm going to talk to you about a significant challenge that we're all facing together. So what's working? First, the Employment Department administers the Unemployment Insurance Program, which provides replacement funds for workers unemployed through no fault of their own. Now, that system over the last 3 years has been revamped. It used to be administered through field offices locally, and we basically consolidated into three call centers and online and phone internet services so that folks can file their claims really 24/7, either via internet or over the phone. So you don't have the long lines in the offices for people trying to file claims. Now, Oregon has 1.9 million folks in the labor force right now. For 2006, we varied between 86,000 and 122,000 that were unemployed monthly. That's a 5.4% seasonally adjusted annual rate. That's similar to the levels that we saw in the late 1990s. I think you were talking about that earlier. And that was considered a very tight labor market, which is basically where we are today. And I think you're probably hearing that from the communities in your area, the businesses. We also operate business and employment services. Those are administered, those services, through field offices around the state. And I hope you all know where your field office is and have had a chance to visit there. They refer job seekers and work with businesses so that they get the best match in terms of the jobs they have open and the skills they need. Now, we often see people in the offices that don't have the right skill sets, and that is becoming increasingly important that we have a place to refer those folks to. Largely, we refer those to community college systems, local, what we call 1B providers, who Cam's going to talk about in a minute, but that's a really important network that then work with people to get them job ready so that then we can work with them to place them with the employers. In 2005, the system that we used to match people was significantly changed, and we began to use a system-wide automated iMatch product, and I don't know how many of you know that term or not, but basically it's a state-of-the-art job matching system that looks at people's skills against the jobs that employers have put in and requires the employers to identify what skills they're looking for so that you get a better match of folks that you send out to be interviewed by the employers. It's designed to reduce both the time for the employee or the job seeker, excuse me, and the employer in terms of finding the right skill sets. We also this last year linked UI benefits to iMatch in that if you file a claim for unemployment insurance in Oregon, you must also register in iMatch within 2 weeks or you cease to receive your UI benefits. We have a very a good system of doing that now, and I think it's been pretty effective in making those links. We have some 900,000 folks are registered in Oregon in iMatch skills. Now, those could be out-of-state people, too, that are seeking to move here. We had 150-some thousand of them that we considered active job seekers. Those are folks that are, in the last 90 days, have had some activity on their files. So that's the pool of folks that are registered. We have worked really diligently through the Oregon Workforce Investment Board committee structure to raise public awareness of the services that are offered to employers through the workforce system over the last year. Those efforts include branding of the system calling it WorkSource so that folks know that's where they should go to if they need assistance, and development of a web portal. Now, this is all, the branding is in the beginning stage. You should know that. We surveyed to see what our market penetration has been. And based on 2004-05 data, 20% of those surveyed recognized the name and understood the services that would be provided through WorkSource Oregon. That was a 10% increase from the prior 2 years. So we're going to have another update to that service, but the idea is that, you know, we would across the state have that branding so that people would know where to go, both businesses and job seekers. Another important piece of what the Employment Department does and what you were speaking, a lot of the questions you were asking Dr. Beck really reside, some of those answers, and I would encourage you to invite folks from this section back to talk to you, because workforce and economic research provides business and decision makers like yourself with wage data, unemployment rate, industry and occupational employment data, and career planning information. And out on the web, another internet tool is the Oregon Labor Market Information System called OLMIS. Do any of you know that? That is a very good tool for businesses, job seekers, people who are looking to move to Oregon, businesses, et cetera, because it gives a lot of that kind of data for business people. And last 2 years ago, we actually put up on that website the Oregon Business Information Center, so that after listening to businesses say, you know, they had to go about five different places to find the information on our website, we then housed all that under the Business Information Center as a one-stop kind of place for businesses, and they've been pretty pleased with that product. It won a couple of awards for business innovation.
Excuse me, just for a minute.
Okay.
Representative Bowen.
If I might... two questions.
Sure.
First, it's nice to have Lori and Cam, and pardon the unfamiliarity, but I do know both of them. At the same time, first I'd like to say, Lori, to your department, I had opportunity to take a constituent through the employment department, and I was very impressed. I said that to you and your people. I want to follow that just a little bit further. We just learned that we need higher wage jobs. The person I took through the process was an entry-level job. Do you have that same relationship with the community college, that if you have someone that is underemployed or unemployed, in this case with the entry-level, the office offered to provide employment while they learned a new set of job skills? Is that program available with CAMS people at the community college? Do you employ people while they're learning a higher set of skills, skilling up?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dallin, the idea for most folks, they can't, many of them can't afford to go to school and not work. Many of them have to have both a job and a way to attain additional skills, either through the community colleges or an apprenticeship program or some other short training modules, depending on if they have to get able to do spreadsheets and things like that. So we work with the individuals to try to identify what would work for them. And that's why it's so important to us to have the link with CAMS programs, because we can get them a job, okay, but what they're looking for is the next best job that moves them up so that they begin to attain higher levels of income and are more closely at the level that they could support a family and themselves. So it's an iterative process in terms of working with folks, and the link between CAM and I's programs are extremely important at the local level, and yes, we strive for that in every community.
Thank you. And the second question, and not even a follow-up, Mr. Chairman, CAM directed to you. I know how that system works in the Dalles, and I have to say again, I'm singularly impressed with it, enough that I sing the Department of Employment's praises. But now let's shift the scene a little bit, and I can see Lori's just told me that if I have an underemployed person or a person that is seeking the next best job, we have a program with the community college. How do we drive that into rural Oregon? The Dalles is fortunate They have a community college. But if I had people in, and here we go again, I'll say it so you don't have to say it for me. If you're in John Day or those kind of places, how do you make the connection with learning skill levels that elevate the employer, the employee, the whole, when you're so isolated? How do you do that, Cam?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dahl, you know, if I ruled the world, we'd be able to shake a wand and have it all work seamlessly and perfectly. But in my comments, I will be talking about an innovative program that the governor started through his executive order in 2003, the Employer Workforce Training Fund, which I believe Lito has mentioned earlier this morning. It is administered through our department, and it works directly with businesses across the state to provide skills and training for people who are already employed, no matter where they are in the state. And so I'll cover some of that in my remarks.
I'll be a little patient then. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so to summarize, in terms of the department, there's the three pieces that work together and work within the department together and also then work across the system. That's the Unemployment Insurance Program, the Business and Employment Services with IMATCH, and then the labor market information for businesses and job seekers both and folks wanting to locate here. So those are three very important foundational pieces that the system relies on. So what is the challenge? I think you have in front of you, I tried to give you very little paper, a page that looks like this. And I think I heard you speak of this a little bit earlier, and maybe you talked some about this at your first meeting, but the challenge really is the workforce and economic research people project by occupational category, which is what this is, both the growth and the replacement openings out over the next 10 years. And if you look at these bars on here, what employers are struggling so much with is the slashed marks on here are the replacement openings. And if you look at that closely, you'll see for almost every occupational category that those replacement openings are equal to or greater than the growth openings. So you were talking about the need to grow jobs in Oregon, and that's important for the future. Growth is something that we want to encourage, and that's happening. But at the same time, these employers are faced with all these replacement openings. And so the struggle really is that those growth openings and replacement openings combined at a time to create a lot of stress on the system. And I expect that you've heard from your constituents and business people, like I do when I'm out and about and talking with business folks, they just don't have enough folks to fill these openings. And they don't for three reasons, usually. One, because there just aren't enough applicants to choose from. Two, they may have applicants, but the applicants don't have the right skills. And three, they struggle with drug and alcohol issues in the workplace. And that's a problem. So the challenge really is, as the system tries to meet the needs for Oregon businesses, about how to tap into all the labor pools, how to increase those skill levels in the right skill areas so that we match up with what employers' needs are, and we are able to grow the jobs and the living wage jobs into the future. And so in closing, let me say that the Oregon Workforce Investment Board Strategic Plan, which I think you heard about this morning, as well as the governor's recommended budget, has ideas of how to address those challenges in them. In particular, Lita talked about the Skill Up Fund for people that are either unemployed or underemployed that need skill development. That would be extremely helpful. And then Bob talked, and I think Lita did too, about the $15 million for the Cluster Investment Fund that's in the Economic Development and Community Development Department. Both packages are really important tools for us as we work with the labor force. So I would close with that and let Cam do hers.
Thank you very much, Lori. Cam.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's a nice segue that Ms. Warner has provided for me. You have a teal colored packet from me. Advised to make this a brief overview of the department and to concentrate more on the workforce development side than necessarily the community college side, which likely will happen as we progress through the session. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development is not quite a decade old. It took a federal workforce training program that was in various and sundry places in state government and connected it to the Office of Community College Services in 1999. We actually provide very little training ourselves. We are a pass-through agency, and our mission is to contribute leadership and resources to increase skills, knowledge, and career opportunities for Oregonians. We pass through nearly $700 million a biennium, and I'm looking at the piece of paper that's on the right-hand side of the folder, which is looks like this. And just for FYI, the brand that Lori was talking about that we have adopted for the workforce WorkSource Oregon system is this little Oregonoid, we call him. So that's the brand that we use. We provide those services through the 17 community colleges, 19 adult basic skills programs, 7 workforce areas, and their commensurate boards. We provide services to 36 youth programs across the state, one for each county under the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and a lot of this work happens through the WorkSource Oregon centers. Then there, in the middle of that page, are some factoids about what the department keeps track of, the number of community college students that successfully transfer to the university system, that 88% of adults that we have served enter employment. They actually start the process with Lori almost always. People who are job ready use the labor exchange through iMatch skills to find another job. If they aren't able to find another job, then they are served by what's called Title I-B of the Workforce Investment Act, which is the program that we administer. And as that the factoid there of 88% of adults is quite high across the nation. We also have Representative Dallin's earlier question. Over the last 3 years, 23,000 current workers have been trained in critical knowledge-based industries through the Employer Workforce Training Fund, and I'd like to move your attention to the second sheet on the left-hand side. The first sheet is an organizational chart, which we may cover at another time. But this is just a very brief fact sheet that shows you what's been happening with employment and how people have been, the trend line is in a positive direction since the recession of 2001, 2002, and 2003. Certainly individuals that were serving, and those are people who are not yet job ready, they receive training, resume skills, interview skills, those kinds of things, adult basic education skills, and then enter the workforce. And can also see that in the second graph that wages are also trending upward, which is a good sign. But on the back of that page is a fuller description of the Employer Workforce Training Fund. What the governor's executive order did was establish the fund and gave the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, which Mr. Chair has served on for a number of years, the responsibility for directing the use of that fund. It provides three major kinds of investments. The lion's share of the fund, about $4 million a year, goes directly to the 15 regions, workforce regions of the state, where they work with economic development, employment, the community college, and other workforce partners to establish where are the leading edge jobs and make grants to those companies who are willing to match dollar for dollar an investment in training their current or incumbent workforce. Then a little over $1 million a year is kept at the state level, and again, the statewide workforce board makes a determination about where we might best build statewide capacity. A good example of this is the governor's, the workforce board developed a manufacturing task force. That task force then built what I would call a mini strategic plan and is now about implementing it around manufacturing across the state. And what do we need to do to make sure, as information that you had earlier still shows that Oregon leads the nation in manufacturing, and what steps do we need to take to make sure that as manufacturing grows, that we have the appropriately high qualified and skilled workforce for it. The last piece of the Employer Workforce Training Fund, just under $1 million a year, is used to retain and expand existing companies that are here in the state. This fact sheet that gives you a little more detail about the goals of that fund. We want living wage jobs, not just any job. We want them created and retained in Oregon. We want to make sure that the workforce is highly skilled, and we want to make sure that we're using teams or consortia or groups of companies whenever possible to really expand the knowledge that one company has to multiple companies. And a good example of that would be the RV consortia, which is in Lane County, which serves the cluster of RV manufacturings that are in that in the Cobourg area, that they're all working together, collaborating together as businesses about what are the skill workforce needs they have, and making sure that then the workforce providers and the community colleges are preparing individuals to have those skills. The Employer Workforce Training Fund is our attempt to grow our own. I'm sure you've heard that Oregon imports an awful lot of our talent. We don't believe we can continue to be competitive by doing that. Again, you have heard about the Skill Up Fund. You've heard about the Cluster Investment Fund, which are in the governor's recommended budget. Both of those would go a long way toward helping us grow our own. We also have nearly 400,000 Oregonians that do not have a high school diploma who are in the labor force. And again, we are very aware and targeting services to those individuals so that they get the basic skills and then the technical skills that they need to be contributing members of Oregon's economy.
Commissioner Brawley, Director Warner, thank you both so very, very much. I apologize. I'm going to cut off questions here at this point out of courtesy to the next panel that comes up. But we do hope to be hearing from you on a regular basis throughout the session. Thank you so very, very much for coming today. And I just want to say that you're the cavalry for all of us, particularly in rural Oregon, and thank you for the wonderful jobs that you do.
Thank you.
Our last panel will talk about economic and workforce development opportunities from the Oregon Lottery as well as the Department of Energy. I'd like to call up Director Dale Penn and Director Mike Greeney. Please, welcome. And gentlemen, how fast can you go?
I'll be very quick, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dale Penn. I'm director of the lottery. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I do have a handout which has some basic information about the lottery, and I'll just hit three slides and move on if you have any questions. Just, the lottery is a unique state agency, constitutionally empowered and set in the Constitution. So it on page five has had good earnings in the past, and it is projected to produce earnings into the future, which obviously I know you'd be interested in, because some of these dollars then are available for economic development projects. But the last thing I would focus on is on page 7 of the handout, where it talks about bonding authority. And again, when you talk about infrastructure, and I saw that Director Repine had mentioned there were some lottery bonds that were projected to be used. The lottery is a very strong revenue source for bonding. And just in the last few months, the bonding authority has been upgraded by two of the agencies, which will allow for cheaper insurance costs and lower interest fees for lottery-backed bonds. So we're very, we realize this is an important revenue source for the state of Oregon. It's our goal to produce as much revenue as we can in a responsible manner, keeping in mind issues of problem gambling, as Representative Lim and I have discussed a number of times. But that's a quick overview. In 2 or 3 minutes, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Tremendous. and let it be said that there is a lot of potential here for economic development. Thank you so much. Questions? Anything burning?
I just commend that the Ken, you are doing a job too good.
I think that's seconded by the entire committee here. Thank you so much. Mike?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Department of Energy. Let me just mention a couple of things real briefly, and I've left you a copy of our legislative package dealing with renewable energy. First, energy costs are very important to businesses as well as to individuals. And businesses have invested using our tax credit more than $900 million of their own money in energy efficiency measures, and that's saving them $300 million a year. And that directly results in job retention and job creation. We estimate that over 6,000 jobs, new jobs, have been created through investments in energy efficiency and renewable energy by businesses. Secondly, the package of legislation you have there is a package to increase development of renewable energy and alternative fuels in Oregon. Most of our energy dollars that we spend on energy goes out of state and much of it out of the country. Renewable energy by developing projects here in the state can keep more of those dollars here. And Representative Dahlem, earlier you had expressed concern about how counties in your area can benefit and stay connected. Many of the most promising wind sites in our state are in counties like Wasco County, Sherman County, Gillam County. There's great interest in renewable energy there, and in fact, farmers can continue to farm right under the wind turbines and get paid royalties for use of those wind turbines. In many cases, they're that's making as much money as from the crops they would grow otherwise. Energy research and development is important in Oregon. Governor Kulongoski's budget for Department of Higher Education has $25 million this biennium for OSU, PSU, University of Oregon, OIT, and the regional campuses on solar, wind, wave energy, geothermal, biomass, and other renewable energy for research and demonstration. And developing those technologies and both the research and the learning experiences that students will have will help help us create some of the workforce we need in the future. Also, you heard from Cam Priest-Brawley on community colleges. Lane Community College has one of the best energy training programs in the country, and we rely on them heavily for our energy expertise. So the universities and the community colleges play a key role in energy infrastructure and workforce training as well. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions or visit with you in more detail in the future.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments from the committee? Yes, Representative Dahlem.
We're looking for a partnership between the city mouse and the country mouse on developing biofuel for the city of Portland. We should come and talk to you, shouldn't we?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dunn, be happy to. And one of the bills there provides additional incentives specifically for biofuels. Another bill, by increasing the business energy tax credit, would apply to biofuels because those are renewable energy sources. And I'd be happy to do that.
I just want to call attention when it comes to economic and workforce development, the potential, the boots on the ground are represented right here by this panel, and hopefully the next time that we hear from both of you, we'll have a little more time. Thank you so very much for the fantastic job you're doing here for the state of Oregon. Appreciate that. Representative Holby, I understand that there is someone in our office that you're, in our audience that you're quite familiar with, Joy Howland?
Yes, if I get Joy to come forward, maybe just say a few moments or say a few words for a moment. I think she has some literature she'd like to leave with us. Yesterday, the Pacific Northwest Economic Region is a group that we're statutorily associated with, was in Salem. Unfortunately, we had some weather issues with trying to give them a proper presentation. Their delegation came from the Yukon Territory, Alberta, some of our largest trading partners, or actually they are our largest trading partners, Canada, and they are engaged in conversations amongst our Pacific Northwest region, including Alaska and Western Canada, in seeking out our economic issues and looking for solutions to move our economy forward. And we'll turn it over to Joy, to Ms. Joy Howland, to speak to us for a few seconds.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman.
If you would, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Joy Howland. I'm a program manager with the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, overseeing what we're calling the Pacific Northwest Innovation Network. Very briefly, I had a chance yesterday, mostly via conference call, to speak with representatives from your universities, Portland State, Oregon State, U of O, to talk about this new project. And essentially, we are beginning to create a platform to combine the region, which consists of the five western states and two provinces and territory of Canada, to begin connecting our universities around innovation, high-tech, market their innovations, brand the region. As we know, a lot of innovation occurs here in Oregon, in Washington, and around the region. So we want to put a better face and a stronger name to that. In your packets towards the end, it does describe all of our program areas, including energy and 2010 Olympics, but there is a two-page overview of the Innovation Network for your reference. And as we proceed and form a task force consisting of representatives from your state, we'd welcome the opportunity to come back and keep you posted on the project.
We certainly would welcome your presence, and Representative Holby will rely on you to make sure that when that timing is right to let us know, and we will invite you back. And thank you so very, very much, Ms. Mm-hmm. Allen, for coming today.
Thank you.
We are we're done for the day here. I just want to let everyone know that we have a very exciting lineup here for our meeting on Friday. We're going to be hearing from Manufacturing 21, the AFL-CIO, the Institute for Sustainable Development, the National Workforce Alliance, and actually several economists here locally from the state of Oregon. With that, seeing and hearing nothing else, our committee is adjourned until Friday. Thank you very much, everyone.